welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray. I'm a coach and I primarily support working parents and carers who believe that parenthood shouldn't be a barrier to a successful and fulfilling career. In this podcast series, I chat to inspirational working parents and ask them to share their own experiences of raising children alongside their careers. We talk about the struggles and the moments of joy. And I hope in each episode, there's something that can bring you a bit more strength and positivity. So please follow, listen, and subscribe on all major platforms. So good morning, everybody. On this episode of The Parent Equation, I'm joined by Ian Dinwiddie. Ian is the founder of Inspiring Dads, a coaching practice which helps stressed dads balance work and fatherhood. So welcome, Ian. Thanks so much for being on.
Hi, thank you for inviting me on.
Now, we're fellow coaches in a similar sphere of working parents, but you obviously specialise in working fathers. So my first question is, I market myself as coaching working parents, but the majority of people who come forward for me are working mums, whereas obviously you specialise in working dads. So just my first question is, why do you think, from my point of view, the working mums find it easier to come forward and the dads don't?
Oh, that's a great question, Aisha. I think it kind of goes to the heart of everything that I do, which is essentially that men tend to internalize their pressures and their solutions, and they tend to think that they can solve it on their own. And one of the challenges that comes from solving things on your own is that if you don't solve them on your own, they become more and more of an issue. And so I strongly believe that some of the mental health challenges that men and dads face, and we see, you know, quite scary research in terms of those kind of stats and in terms of suicide and that side of things, is driven by an underlying reluctance to seek out help at the time when it would make the most difference, and wait until you've got your sense of sort of rock bottom before they take action. And in some cases, that's, you know, tragically, that's too late. Yeah. And a big part of, you know, my work and my sort of philosophy is kind of empowering men to be honest about what they truly want, and then to have open and honest conversations with their partners, and so they start to understand, you know where their life direction is going to go and how they want to do things. Because I think if you don't have those open and honest conversations, then it leads to mental health challenges, and it leads to relationship tension and ultimately relationship breakdown. But for many men, if they look back and actually they regret not getting help early enough. So I would always say that they should get help early enough. It's one of the challenges of working and promoting what I do, is that men are less forthcoming in terms of taking the step as to working, you know, working with a coach or working with a mentor or working with a therapist, whatever it might be. They take a while to get to that stage. And, you know, we know, you know, and we were talking before, we know that when we work with people that we have, you know, amazing results, and we want to show people that. But sometimes, certainly, I think men are slightly slower to react to the clues and the pressures that they're facing to actually go, actually, I'm ready to do something now. And they wait a little bit longer than, in hindsight, they probably, you know, probably wanted to.
And do you find then that men potentially perceive themselves to be weak if they want to come forward and speak about their problems?
I think historically, absolutely, definitely, they would have considered themselves to be weak. I think that narrative is changing. I think we're seeing a lot more men who are much more comfortable with being open and vulnerable, and the more role models, the more famous kind of people, the more people who have faced up to this, who tell their story and say, actually, I struggled I'm struggling now, which is even more powerful, probably. I'm struggling now and I'm doing something about it. It helps to normalize a sense that it's okay. It's okay not to be okay. And it's okay to be struggling. And actually, there are huge numbers of people out there, and they're often right under your nose, who will help you and are ready to help you. But I think men are very good at putting on a brave face and concealing some of those challenges that they face.
And actually, having the confidence to step forward and to speak up is actually strength, in my view. So confidence to do that means you have strength there, and it's ready to be used in some way to put to a good purpose through using a coach like yourself, for example.
Yeah, I think it's a strength. It takes an inner strength. Sometimes, you know, men are good at projecting a particular type of version of strength. It's a version they probably learnt from their fathers and their fathers' fathers. And the world is changing, and it's much more complex than it was, you know, even 20 years ago, certainly 40 years ago. The amount that is expected of men has changed, and also the amount that men expect of themselves, and certainly dads, if we're talking about dads in particular, which is my kind of sort of sweet spot, my niche is, you know, helping stressed dads to balance work and fatherhood. And if we're thinking about dads in particular, then they want to be more involved, and society considers them, you know, to be ready to be more involved. You know, there are elements where it is a challenge sometimes for dads to be taken seriously as parents, I think. It starts early when you think about some of the conversations that health visitors have with new dads, or rather they don't have at all with new dads. It's all about mums. So there is a challenge there. And then probably the workplace is the main major challenge is how do workplaces in general see the role of dads as parents, and how that fits together with the overall sort of narrative about what success looks like at work?
Yeah. Yeah. And then my husband, an anecdote on that, really. My husband, when I had my first child 10, 11 years ago almost, he felt completely sidelined in the delivery room by everybody present. I don't think they even introduced themselves to him at one point. He's sort of sitting in the corner, you know, the dad in the corner, this sort of stranger, while all the focus is on me. And I think he left thinking that I didn't understand why that happened, and why wasn't I included in the discussions and acknowledged at least. So that might be different now, 10 years later, but not.
I would like to say yes, but I don't think it's changed as much as we might hope. You only have to look at the difficulties that dads have had over lockdown period and COVID in terms of getting access to scans, getting access to anything related to sort of what we've taken for granted, which are dads are there, even if perhaps we're not paying as much attention to what they want and what they need. My brother and his wife had their second daughter, 1st of June, I think it was. So right in the middle of sort of lockdown. And one of the things that he said was quite noticeable was that once you're on the ward, you were locked in, you weren't allowed to leave. So they were there for sort of 18, 19 hours. You couldn't go in and get any food. There was no food. The only food that was available was being provided for the mums, and the dads were just like, well, you should have been more prepared, kind of thing. And so there was very much, they were like, well, we kind of want you to be here because you're useful to support, but actually we don't really want you to be there at all. And someone else I talked to, one of the concerns, a lady called Nadia Nagamutu, she had a baby just before Christmas. And one of her big concerns was also that, that her husband wasn't going to be able to be involved, and that she was really, she was hoping for a home birth. And that's what they were planning for, because they weren't really sure what the alternative was. So I think, I don't think things have changed. I mean, there are COVID factors to consider, but actually that underlying sense that, in certain areas of society, we don't necessarily take dad's role as parents seriously enough is still there, I think.
Yeah, and I was talking to another guest the other week about this, and how the books that you get when you're a new dad, and you'll be more familiar with this than I am, they're still written very much with a sort of, what's the word, you're a support in this, you're just a support, and this is what you have to do to help the mother of your child, etc. But there's no real... they're not talking to the man, I guess, as a strong part of that partnership and as the father of that child. It all seems a little bit, again, sidelined.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I think that by necessity, then the focus needs to be on mums, and it needs to be on support. Support for birth. Sometimes it's birth partners, isn't it? It could be a dad. It could be anyone who really in the support role. But it wouldn't do any harm to reframe the conversation slightly so that, dads were more involved from the start. And because that leads into enormous benefits later on for parents, for couples and for children as well, when dads are kind of accepted and used to the idea that they are as responsible for the child as the mum. And I think what some of the biggest challenges we have around gender equality and unlocking everyone's full potential is that men aren't seen as being, I guess, use the right words. I've talked about this lots of times, but men, it's often seen with men, men are often seen as optional in the childcare equation. You know, you only have to look at men who sort of, you know, who talk about the fact that, oh, my, you know, my boss said, oh, can't your wife do that? You know, why do you have to take time off to look after your kids? You only have to look at that kind of element that goes on, and that kind of description that you get from dads who are just like, well, equal opportunities is fantastic, and we've got this great leave, and there's all sorts of things going on. But I get distracted by the fact that my daughter's Teams thing, notifications come up. And I haven't even got Teams on.
This is the beauty that infiltrates your world.
Oh, I've had to mute Teams all over the place. Anyway, you can clearly, this might be great to keep in. It's like it's peak kind of.
No, we'll keep this in. This is real life.
Real life. Bottom of my screen, up pops.
This is what's happening.
A message about Teams and my children's Teams. Literally, Teams is not even on. But we need to sort of reframe this so that dads are taken seriously from the start, so that, you know, dads get extended leave, and when they go back to work, it's accepted that they will want to be flexible, so that we don't have men and women treated differently, because it doesn't support women's opportunities to return to work and to reach their potential. It doesn't support dads who want to do things differently and want to be more active and hands-on fathers.
And I think that's the thing. It's wanting to do things differently. And demonstrating, again, probably through role modelling and great leadership, that everyone has a choice to take a different path. And it's not, I think the word normal is not a normal choice. It's not about being normal. It's about what works for you and your family. And it could be any manner of combinations, couldn't it?
It can be. And I think sometimes it's very easy to slip into the combinations that we grew up with, which, you know, in sort of simplistic terms is men as breadwinners and women as carers, and those two much more likely to be blended currently if you're a woman. You know, women who work full-time are also expected by society and by, you know, societal pressure, and also by workplaces, I guess, and also by their partners to be the lead for domestic labor, for looking after the home, looking after the children, even if they're working full time. That's the assumption. And part of that is driven by men being told that there's no possible way that it's okay for you to work flexibly or to take an afternoon off. Because, well, why do you want to do that? Because you've got a partner. Yeah. They should be doing that. That's the role of women. And we need to break that that paradigm so that we can move into a more equitable existence for everyone, so everyone has a choice and can do things differently. Because that's what really, in many ways, what really kills gender equality opportunities is this assumption that women will be looking after children and men won't be looking after children. And so it's almost irrelevant whether as a young woman you plan to have children or will have children. If you are of a certain age, say 30, two candidates for a job, one man is 30, one woman who's 30, both recently got engaged, both equally qualified. If you can't tell which one of those two candidates is going to take extended leave for parental reasons, is going to want to work flexibly, maybe it's going to take several parts of extended leave, if you can't tell because policies and your culture say that men can do that as well, then you can't discriminate against the woman. And it's really, really powerful way of allowing choice for everyone, and supporting women achieving what they deserve to in the workplace, is to see them as equal parents with the fathers of their children, because that's one of the things. It's not necessarily a popular opinion that actually you need to work with men to unlock opportunities for women, and I appreciate that's not a popular opinion in certain areas, and I steer clear of those debates on Twitter if I can. But I only did it once and never again. It doesn't matter how logically how the logic works, it doesn't always land. But actually, the majority of workplaces are run by men, often men in their 50s and 60s, and they set the culture. And in, and actually, you need to work on those men to make it okay for younger men who look up and say, actually, there's some role modeling. If I want to get to this position, this is how I can behave. I don't have to be in the office. It doesn't work so much on a podcast. Inverted commas, in the office. As we look out of the snow, we can't even travel into the office, even if we didn't have COVID, probably at the moment when we're recording this. Unless we change that round, then you won't unlock the full potential for huge swathes of the population.
But I think that point about supporting men means ultimately better support for women is something that actually, I'm not sure it's an opinion people necessarily disagree with. I think it might be an opinion people I didn't aware of. So it's actually only when I spoke to James Miller last week or week before, and he said, it's very similar to you, that the reason he's campaigning for fathers' rights is will help the rights of mothers. Yeah. And it'll help that balance for everybody and for men, women, families, etc. And I thought, oh yeah, of course. And it seems obvious, but I suppose maybe it's not articulated in that way. So the general public potentially don't think of fathers' rights not just being about fathers, it's about helping mothers and families as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know James very well, and I was listening to that this morning before we came on, and we've worked on a number of projects together, including a podcast called Lockdown Dads. Yes. It's not about men's rights. And it's men's rights and MRA, isn't it? Men's rights activists. They have a particular view of life, which is that in some way men are repressed, and I just simply don't agree with that. Mm. I think men set the agenda in a lot of ways, both explicitly and implicitly, and understanding that when men become dads, they are put under an enormous amount of emotional and practical stress. Starting with difficult birth, starting with wanting to be the rock that your family's built on, on fearing fearing how their partner's getting on and how they're coping with their hormonal changes, putting to side their own challenges. Something like 25% of men worldwide suffer from some kind of postnatal depression. It does exist. Men are quite good at hiding it because couple of weeks of leave potentially and then back into work, they're redoubling their efforts at work because who knows what the future holds. They could be the sole breadwinner, and that comes with a lot of pressure. And understanding that men really struggle, or a lot of men really struggle with that transition period, and saying and being really careful about how we can help those dads to understand the pressures they're going under, going through. And then also gain skills that help them to cope with that, and gain skills as a family that allows joint parenting, solo parenting for dad. So they're not scared to be on their own with a young child because they've got the skills. They've had time on their own because, when it comes, 6 months down the line, a year down the line, when it comes to mum potentially returning to work, then the dad and actually the mum's got this great opportunity, but it's 5 days a week, and the dad maybe needs to work 4 days a week to make it work. Whatever dynamics might be there, if dads haven't been included and aren't comfortable with that childcare of their own children, because as James talked about, dads don't babysit.
Indeed.
You can't babysit your own children. But if you're looking after and you need to look after your children and you haven't done it before, then you may well be pushing back and it may not be possible. And, there's nothing worse. There's a lot of things that are worse, but there's that terrible situation that dads frequently feel and face, which is the child doesn't want them. They only want mummy. We can't get anything there. The woman can't go back to work because the guilt of, there's enough guilt anyway, guilt of leaving a young child behind who doesn't, or leaving a young child with dad. That shouldn't be guilt. That shouldn't be a challenge. You shouldn't be worried about that. But actually, the dads say, the child just cries all the time because he just wants mummy. So, if you go back, it's hard to undo these things. But actually, if we get it right from day one, then we unlock benefits and we unlock opportunities for everyone and loads of dads. I mean, it's hard to find a dad who doesn't say that actually spending time with children, my children, maybe not other people's children, they're quite fun. Spending time with your own children and bonding and building meaningful relationships isn't one of the most amazing things you can do. Then I think they're missing out if they don't feel or have missed out. And, you know, get that right and everyone has a choice. You know, it may be difficult choices. There may be difficult choices about income and, you know, family objectives and family goals, but there are choices there. And those choices can only help everyone. They also help society more generally.
Exactly.
Slightly intangible, but it does, it is there.
So talk about choices and the challenges then you've just been talking about with fathers. So when you do get a father who needs your help and they have got over the fact they've need to speak up and come forward and seek you out in the first place. So once they've got over that hurdle, what are the most frequent challenges or scenarios that the guys you work with are facing?
I think it comes back to a kind of sense of purpose and to a certain extent, sort of legacy. So I work with almost like two types of men, really. Men who are very early into their fatherhood journey, maybe you know, first child, do sort of corporate work on supporting new dads, in the same way you would with paternity return to work coaching. So men in particular who have taken advantage of extended parental leave, that sort of thing. And then I also work with men often privately who are a little bit older, so whose children are maybe four or five. And we've moved out of that kind of survival mode and we're looking at, and it's almost like you've been head down for a while and your head's up. You're like, right, well, what next? You know, children are okay. You know, there's nothing fundamentally I need to worry about there. You know, I've got the hang of being a dad. What's my, you know, and for men, it's often about, you know, what's my purpose now? You know, when you're in your, when you don't have children, you're in your, maybe in your 20s, it's all about work and it's all about, you know, it's all about getting ahead and it's about performance and all these things, whether it might be performance from a sporting angle, at, you know, performance at work and earning money and having the, you know, the trappings of a lifestyle that you've earned. And what you're finding is that men sort of almost regardless of where they've come from, reach a certain point and say, well, actually, I've got these children. These are mine. What am I building for them? And so helping them to understand what it is that fundamentally they want, and then be able to communicate that to their partners and be able to create shared purpose and direction as a couple for those for those men who are in relationships. And actually, you know, that's not always the case. We can't assume that the relationship has survived. But if we put in the right foundations and fingers crossed, you know, the relationship is okay. So we're looking at talking about quite a simple coaching exercise, be, do, have, you know, writing down all the things you want to be as a dad, all the things you want to have and all the things you want to do, and start to filter that list. So you get a clear sense of what it is that's important to you. And actually, what a lot of men find, in my experience, is it's more about who they want to be that is the overriding. Yes, there are things about having things, and there are things, certainly things about doing. So often holidays and experiences, this sense of quality experiences comes through. And quality versus quantity time is quite an interesting kind of concept in of itself. But, you know, experiences are important, but often it's about being. And what men tend to find in that process is the things that are really important to them, and I try and get them to choose their top five, tend not to have enormous financial burdens associated with them. So men find that actually to get what they really want isn't as far away as they thought it might be. And so we take that concept of be, do, have, that your personal have, and then it's about encouraging those coachees to have those conversations with their partners and to make sure that they're aligned and they're talking about the same sort of things, and make sure they've got a list of three or five things that are really important as a family that are going to be that shared purpose and direction, that when things get difficult or when things are under pressure, you can refer back to that list. And that's your lighthouse. That's your, that's your beacon in the darkness. So actually, are these things still important? Yes, this is how we're going to measure success. Actually, are we doing a good job? You know, very hard, these, you know, very easy during the pandemic with lockdown and children at home and adults at home and not being able to do anything is to forget that actually we're probably, you know, most people are probably doing all right if they go back to their understanding of what was important. But you have to have done the work up front to understand that, so that you have this shared purpose. So those are kind of the key foundations, because then you're talking about legacy. You're talking about purpose, and we can deliver against purpose, and it's a legacy. You know, I think men probably more than women think about, what am I leaving behind? Is it am I leaving, you know, assets? Am I leaving values? Am I leaving, you know, what's someone going to say at my funeral? You know, what's the eulogy going to be like? What are people going to look back and say, actually, you know, this person, he did this, this, and this, and this, and that was important.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So I think that's the kind of sort of core fundamental. And then what I tend to bring that's perhaps different from other coaches is that understanding of how men's personal goals need to be very much embedded in the family goals and their partner's goals.
Yeah.
I think it's very easy for men to be blindsided by their own objectives, certainly from a work perspective. You know, one of the saddest things I saw on LinkedIn was a man writing about his lack of work-life balance and how many hours he was doing. I hope he wrote something like, I hope they understand I do it all for them. And I read that and I thought, well, are you doing it all for them?
Yep.
And B, if you're not sure, then maybe you need to be having these conversations. And if everyone's happy with that and you have these conversations with the family and say, you know, daddy needs to do this, he needs to work these hours, and this is how life is going to look like for a couple of years, then great. But if you haven't had that conversation, it's just more about what you think is important and right for you, then you're probably missing a trick. It might well catch you out later on down the line.
So you talk quite rightly there about communication with your partner, with your family, as a group, as a team. Do you then ever get the partners involved in the conversations you're having with the dads, or is it still very much the one-to-one with the fathers, and then you just encourage them to have the conversations?
It's very much one-to-one with the fathers.
Yeah.
What's quite interesting is that I get a lot of leads from the partners. So I will have women who will encourage, they'll say, "Ooh, I like what you're doing. My husband, my partner could really do with talking to you."
Yeah.
And so they will be the nudge that starts that conversation often. You know, it's not all the time. There are plenty of men out there who are more than self-aware about what they need to do and are prepared to take action. But equally, the permission and the encouragement of a man who's got his head down with all, you know, the stresses of his life on his shoulders and just getting through the day by day, to be sort of encouraged and nudged and say, actually, I've seen this man talking about you, the challenges I think you're facing. It sounds like you could be a good fit, or it's someone I know. You know, sometimes it's someone I know. I often don't know the dad that well, but sometimes I know the partner, and they encourage. So no, I don't work in terms of the couple side of things. I think that's quite an interesting way to go. I mean, it sounds a lot like couples therapy rather than necessarily coaching. So it's different. It's a ball. It's somewhere where you don't want to go. But I think. Because I've worked for a long time remotely, because I've been a stay-at-home dad twice, I haven't worked a standard 5-day, 40-hour week since early January 2010, when it's just before our daughter was born. I haven't done that for that long. I think I can ask men the questions that their partner might ask, or the questions that I think their partner might be concerned about, because I think I understand the mental load, the domestic labor angle, the vision. I bring both I bring both a female perspective, because I've experienced kind of sort of social environments are much more female dominated. Raising children, looking after children on a full-time basis is much more common, much more likely to be a woman who's done that. I bring that perspective, and therefore I can ask different questions. And it's not, so I'm asking questions that are more likely to be holistic in terms of family, work-life balance than necessarily a focus on performance and outcomes.
Yeah, and sometimes some of those performance and outcome coaches, which I've seen on LinkedIn, just perpetuate exactly what you're talking about with the sort of corporate man and the image the man has to be, where they talk about no bullshit coaching and I'll take you to the next level and you'll be the man you want to be. And it's this, you know, macho alpha male coaching.
Yeah.
Which if that man has a, or that client has a partner and a family, they're going completely opposite direction to what you and I are talking about today.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I find it a little bit off, but I roll my eyes a little bit. But it's like, I know if that's your niche and you're talking to your niche, there are plenty of men out there that will resonate with. Yeah. I just hope those men who are very alpha performance and legacy is all, you know, being a great dad ends at the paycheck. And there are plenty of men out there who will kind of suggest that they've done their job when they provided, and that's it. Yeah. You know, anything else is extra. I bring the money. Mm. That's it. You see on Facebook groups, it's pretty scary. Like I do challenges. Like how can you just ignore the whole of the rest of your life just because you've earned some money? I mean, congratulations. Yeah. You know, if I got a lottery scratch card, I've provided for my family. I mean, it can be luck as well. Mm.
Yep.
You know, well done for working hard, but let's not make it into, sometimes I call it hustle porn. And I think men get very stuck into the hustle and the drive, yeah, and the, yeah, that side of things. That's fine as long as you are having those open and honest conversations with the people who are around you who are important, and that they are bought into that vision as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I wrote a piece probably a couple of years ago now called The Ghost of Christmas Future. And I know technically Dickens didn't write about Christmas Future, but The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. But it doesn't work quite so well when you do it as a blog post.
Not the modern day.
There's a man called Matt Rudd, who's a journalist at The Times, and he wrote a piece which was, why aren't more middle-aged men happy?
Mm.
And he had interviewed men at commuter stations in London, and they were probably my kind of age, or mid-40s, maybe a little bit older, and he talked to them anonymously about the experiences of their lives. And he found so many men who were stuck in this cycle of high spending, high earning, high spending, have to keep going, and feeling estranged in many ways from their children, frequent and their partners, and that living almost separate lives. In some cases, they were living, you know, this is obviously pre-pandemic, so they were commuting, say, an hour and a half each way from maybe Sussex. A lot of them were coming out of Victoria, so they were kind of Sussex area. And they were just not connected, but they felt they could not get off that path.
Yeah.
And part of it was because they had bought into this notion that, you know, the most important thing is to be earning and providing. And also, you know, let's be honest, work is a sense of enormous sort of self, it's important. It's important. It's important for our sense of self, self well-being and those kind of things. Identity, that's the word I'm looking for. Identity, self-identity. And that is important. But they were so far into that, they hadn't stopped to question whether what kind of context, what was going to end up happening. And so they were just stuck, and they hadn't built great relationships with the people around them, the people who are nearest and dearest. And in some cases, they felt it was possibly too late. You know, there were skiing holidays, there were private schools, there were, you know, they bought a new bigger house, there was mortgage debt to pay, they couldn't step back from it. And so I do roll my eyes a little bit at that kind of ethos. And I just hope that those men that are involved are, you know, taking it seriously, what the implications are, and bringing people with them so that everyone does know. So you're not asking the questions, I hope they realize it's all for me. That's not, that's not hope. It's not. Let's make sure you've actually had that conversation, because it will cause relationship breakdown.
Yeah, it's a massive assumption, isn't it? That you know what other people are thinking, and you haven't had those conversations in the first place. So you were on a similar path at one point in your career, I believe. You're a management consultant.
Yeah.
So you could have been on that path and that hamster wheel forevermore. So what was it that changed for you to change your career and change your path, and how did you go about doing it?
Yeah, great question. I on the face of it, I was on that path, but it never really felt like that, consultancy was something I wanted to do because I wanted to challenge myself in that kind of environment. And I worked in publishing, and what I felt was that it was book publishing for Hodder and Stoughton. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I was doing felt like it was consultancy. It was solving problems and bringing people together. And I went to University College London, where a lot of my friends seemed to be doing that sort of work. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, they can do it. I can do this as well. I can't be that hard. And it's really, really good. Anyway, obviously, it is hard at times to persuade people to do something that when you've got no line management authority and the pressures of consultancy are quite high. We knew as a couple, the context is really about relationships and communication. Mm-hmm. So my wife's a lawyer. She's quite senior now. But even when we met, then the gender pay gap was in favor of her. I think at the time she probably earned roughly twice what I did when we met.
Okay.
So although I was a consultant, I was still relatively junior. I'd come in, I'd transferred in from something else. And that pay gap had never really changed. So there was, to a certain degree, a pragmatic financial decision that was taken, was that if one of us was going to need to step back from work, then from a financial point of view, then it made sense that it was me. Mm. But also from the dynamics of the industries that we worked in. So law is hard to it's hard to do on a part-time basis. Mm. It's hard to do on a freelance basis. It doesn't work in quite the same way, whereas consultancy absolutely can be done. And I did operational change. I did a lot of supermarket work and a lot of food manufacturing work.
Okay.
And you can actually do a short project, or you can do stuff that's 3 days a week. You can take a work stream and you can do that. And I did that several times after the kids were born. I took on elements of that. So we had this conversation about actually, well, how are we going to live our lives when children come along? We were planning, hopefully we'll have children. Mm-hmm. We were married in 2008. And so we were having conversations sort of relatively, once the relationship, you don't have them too early because you don't want to put anyone off, but I can't remember when we started having those conversations, Lisa and I. Mm-hmm. But we started having these conversations about what life would look like if we had children.
Yeah.
And
may I say in itself is a very mature conversation to have. Because I'm not sure people do have those conversations at that stage.
I don't think they do. And I think in part it was driven by the fact that there was an income differential in favour of my wife. So you couldn't just say man work, woman care. You couldn't just go back to those kind of Stone Age stereotypes and this is what we're going to do. You had to look at it differently because our circumstances started out differently. Mm. So I would say there was some master plan, but there really wasn't. It was, okay, we decided that because we didn't have grandparents around who could do childcare, we either had a choice of full-time childcare, and even that would be difficult because management consultancy working away, potentially lawyers tend to work, they might not start that early. Actually, my wife tends not to start that early in the day, works late. You know, how do you cover looking after children if you have children? Mm. Unless you outsource and you have an au pair, you go down that route where you pursue your careers and then you spend a chunk of that money on supporting children, looking after children. And we didn't want to go down that route. And I have no friends who do, and that's their choice, and they've made it, hopefully, I think they have made that choice with a sort of open mind as to how it works and what you trade off. We didn't want to make that trade-off. We wanted one of us always to be there. And so you look at the financial dynamics and the dynamics of the industry and that kind of core family goal. And it made sense for me to step back at some stage. And so what we did was I had 2 weeks of statutory paternity leave. I'd asked to be on a London project, which my business were able to support. Mm-hmm. And then I'd pre-arranged that I'd go to 4 days a week when Freya was born and I came back to work. And then for 6 months, I did 4 days a week with my fifth day, my home day, being sort of flexed around the business needs. I was flexible. I could be flexible. They could be flexible. And then I had a finish date. And I had a finish date for working as a consultant, I think about 9 months before it actually happened. So we had it all planned out. Mm. A business were all bought into it, a team were all bought into it. And then I stopped work. We had in the middle of 2010. And we had a couple of weeks, the two of us. And then my wife went back to work as the lawyer. She got full pay maternity for pretty close to 6 months.
Yep.
It then drops off a cliff very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so that was our transition period. And Yeah, with a 6-month-old daughter, I became full-time dad for the first time in about middle of June 2010. And it was all to me, solo dad, solo parenting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wife was out to work from, she'd leave the house at 7:15 and be home at 9:15, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Monday to Friday, that kind of thing potentially. Yeah. So big long days. Mm. So an enormous opportunity, but it all came down to communication. It came down to circumstances to a certain degree, came down to communication, came down to being clear on what was really important to us. Mm.
Mm. And 10 years ago, as you say, being a stay-at-home dad 10 years ago, again, presumably is quite a different prospect to these days, as in the acceptance of that, the inclusion of you when you went to groups or did whatever you did.
I think it's probably less novel than it was. It's very difficult to know not being a dad, not being a new dad now.
Mm, yeah.
I think things have changed. I was the only regular dad at any of the activities that I went to. And I used to go to all of them. I used to have one a day pretty much. We'd have something in the diary to do.
Yeah.
There were occasionally dads who would appear, but there were dads who were like rabbits, deer in the headlights. Sort of.
Under duress.
And you felt for them. Well, not, yeah, maybe under duress. It was more that they just didn't know how to, in some ways, they didn't know how to, it weren't comfortable interacting with their child in front of other people potentially, and certainly not, and they weren't that comfortable in large groups of women.
Yeah,
something I didn't have a issue with at all. I have a lot of female friends. I worked in workplaces, when I was in publishing I was the only man in a team of 15 or 14 I think in the sales team, and I've always been very comfortable having conversations with women I didn't know.
Yeah,
just how it was for me. But there were plenty of men who weren't, and they were reluctant to go in and get involved, and they were reluctant to go to what was a mother and baby group, and they weren't unlike me, they weren't prepared to go into to find the baby change regardless of where that was. Knock on the door, sorry ladies, is there anyone in here? I need to change my baby. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm in the ladies' toilets changing my child. But this is where the changing
is. That's where it is. Yeah.
And I used to be very militant about that. In hindsight, I mean, at the time, I wasn't intending to be a coach, and I certainly wasn't intending to work with dads. But in hindsight, I was modeling some of that sort of solo parent, that brave dad parenting. It's like, I can do this. The only thing I can't do is breastfeed. And we haven't been breastfeeding Freya for a couple of months now. So there is nothing I can't do as a man for my child. It was a bit strange, but it was very enjoyable. And certainly you saw men who, there was a dad's group I used to travel across London, sort of 45 minutes across London to go to, tied in with seeing other friends. Wimbledon dad's group, still going, twice a week they meet over in Wimbledon. Yep. Really good opportunity for dads who were looking after their children to meet together. So it was, and there were a few au pairs actually, I think, when I was there, a few au pairs, and they really enjoyed it because the dads were much more friendly apparently than the mums groups, because the dads just like chat to anyone. It's you're looking after you're the au pair. Oh yeah, we know the baby and all this kind of stuff. It was really great, but it was also quite sad because there were so many dads who that was all they were doing. They weren't interacting. They didn't feel included in that broader piece around parenting and looking after children, and it couldn't have been good for their mental health, and it was probably difficult for the children children were fine, but it wasn't great for them, and it wasn't great for their mental health.
Do you mean from a society point of view being included, or from a family?
I think from a society point of view, as a dad going into a room which is full of mums and babies, and there's predates Me Too, but there's always that always that sense of, actually, am I even allowed to have a conversation with a woman who's not my wife? I mean, some of that was going on for certain. That was some of the vibe you were getting, and some of the things that some of the guy says, like, well, they're just their parents, they happen to be a woman. You can talk to another woman. You can talk to a woman. You've got a shared concept of childcare here, and they're just people. But there was that nervousness as well. That may actually be, I don't know. I suspect it is easier. I like to think it's easier. But I think there's still that, you still see a lot of things that are promoted in a way that makes your eyes roll. When you see a PTA Christmas fair sign that says, your husband says you can buy anything you like from PTA this Christmas. And I saw that on Facebook. I was like, am I allowed to roll my eyes? And she said, yes, it wasn't my idea. And, you know, you see, and too much of it is, you know, too much of it is, you know, is assuming that dads aren't really interested or aren't involved. And I think that's, it's difficult for everyone, I think, if that's perpetuated.
So you say you didn't have coaching in mind at that point. So where did that idea come from? Where did that sort of passion for coaching emerge from?
So it started with my wife, actually, as you know, most good ideas come from your partner in many cases. And she, at her law firm, she was receiving, there was a women's leadership development course at her firm. Mm. And as part of that, she was receiving coaching. And at that stage, I'd done some freelance consultancy work, I guess. But I knew you couldn't do that on a long-term basis because you know, often the jobs were too far away or the time frames didn't work. And, you know, I was limited in some ways to companies that I'd already worked for who knew what I could deliver and therefore didn't mind that I was available on Monday, Thursday and a Friday, for instance, which was at one stage I did a Monday, Thursday and a Friday. I did a Thursday and a Friday. So I had very non-standard hours. So that wasn't sustainable. And she said, the coaching I'm receiving feels a lot like the things that you really enjoyed from management consultancy. Mm. It's helping other people to understand the pressures, the problems they're facing, and to help them come up with solutions. And so that seems a lot like, you know, sort of things you really enjoy doing. Because at this stage, I was looking for something I could do on a long-term basis and to fit around this idea that I would always be there for the kids. So quite a sort of female imperative in many ways. So a lot of mums will set up businesses for that exact same reason. And that was what I was thinking about. What can I do that will fit? So I spoke to someone who was a coach, spoke to a couple of people, realized I knew someone I'd worked with who was now coaching, find out about what coaching was, what it wasn't. I thought, yeah, this is a really good fit for what I really enjoy doing. Mm. And it kind of went from there, took a 2-day coaching course and really enjoyed it, met some great people, signed up, paid money, went to the coaching academy, and I did my diploma, got a distinction, practiced. And I came out of it, you start thinking, what's my niche? What am I going to do with this now? I've got a coaching diploma. That's a good thing. I know how to coach. And it's really the only start of it. And I thought I wanted to work with working parents. I worked and I trained with both men and women. Mm. What I really enjoyed and what the sort of sweet spot was that it was talking to newish dads who were facing the pressures and the challenges, I guess, that emotionally I'd faced around identity and balance and, you know, how to be a great dad and have a great career. Those two sort of two concepts. Sort of I could see in some of my clients where I was sort of 3 or 4 years earlier. Mm-hmm. And I was like, actually, this is who I want to work with. I mean, at the time when I did that, I didn't realize quite how challenging it might be to convert the interest that people might have in that kind of approach and solving problems from a sort of work and work-life balance, I guess, in many ways, work-life balance challenge. It was much harder to convert them, but I realized I found my sweet spot. And then I started writing about it and I started coaching a couple more people and I started putting myself out there. And then over time becoming more and more clear about it's not really about dads per se. There are clearly well-being, relationship benefits for supporting new dads, helping them to be clear about what they want and how to get there. But there are also big societal benefits in terms of opportunity for women. And I see it because I have a wife who is now a senior lawyer, and I've seen the pressures and the assumptions that women face coming up through the ranks in an organization, in an industry that is male dominated by men who are dads. When their children were young, they were not looking after them. They had someone else who did all of that. So they don't necessarily see it in the same way. And seeing, having a sort of ringside seat into my wife's challenges made me realize that sort of joining the dots between supporting, you know, why gender equality in many ways starts with new dads. They are the they are the wedge that that transition and change is the wedge that you can use to open up bigger benefits. And there was something really striking that a client and my wife said to me, and she realized, and she'd reflected on what she believed and realized how damaging it was for her as a young woman. And she said that when she first started working with my wife, that she didn't think a woman, she didn't think she had kids because she didn't think a woman, or more particularly a mum, could do this job. And she realized how damaging that was for her prospects, for every young woman, that you assumed that she, as a woman, assumed that mums couldn't work the hours that were required to do that particular type of type of job and that particular type of client-facing role. And I think that's one of the things we, you know, one of the big benefits about any work with new dads is unlocking the opportunities for society to see dads as equally likely to take leave, equally likely to be flexible. And we can't divide expectations. We can't assume that women don't want to do this and can't be fully involved in the workplace. And equally, we don't assume that dads can't or don't want to be fully involved at home. When we get that, you know, I think we're slowly getting that into better balance. But when we get it into perfect, you know, great balance, everyone's got a choice as to how they live their lives. And I think that's the fundamentally the most important thing.
And also for us then to be role models for our children. So as they are younger and growing up, sons or daughters, I've got two daughters, you've got one of each, I think.
One of each, yeah.
One of each. That they are seeing. So my daughters are seeing mummy now working, and she can work and she can make that choice. Yeah. And in your example, they can see daddy at home doing both, working and caring, and they can see that as an option as well. So hopefully that's embedded from a very young age. So by the time they do get to 18, think about their future, all of these options aren't abnormal. It's all choice, all whatever you want to be, you can be. So hopefully.
Hopefully. I mean, it's one of the questions on the, I know you did the scorecard this morning, on the successful dad scorecard on my website.
I did the successful dad scorecard as a mum.
As a mum. But there's a question in there, which I think is cuts to the heart of that role modelling. I hope, like, think it does anyway, which is how, I think it says, how much of a disaster would it be if your children follow, you know, if your children had the same work-life balance as you did? Words along that effect. And it's just like, what are you demonstrating? What are you showing? Is this is this what you want your, is this what you want for your children? And if it isn't, then, you know, it's never too late to start.
No, because they will, they will see it and they will, you know, they will perpetuate what they see. That's just how life goes, isn't it? This circle of life, cycle of life, whatever the right wording is.
Definitely.
Ian, I think we've probably come to the end of our time. I never have clocks to look at, so I'm going on for hours then you'll miss meeting or something. So what's the best way, so if you want to get hold of you, either for coaching, so for dad's coaching, or to share their stories, or for any other reason, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, so my website is inspiringdads.co.uk, and so there's links all over that to my LinkedIn page. I connect with lots and lots of people on LinkedIn, love sharing ideas and stories on LinkedIn. There's a Twitter link there. It's all under Ian Dinwiddie. There is only one other Ian Dinwiddie out there.
In the whole world.
In the whole world, it's true. He is in this country. But on Twitter, I'm Ian Dinwiddie. I'm also Ian Dinwiddie at LinkedIn. There's Instagram, but all the links can be found through inspiringdads.co.uk. And also you can get involved and take the Successful Dads quiz, scorecard quiz.
Yes, do. As I said, I did it today, not realizing it was brand new. So I'm glad I got involved early.
First as a mum since it's officially out.
Yeah, it's great. So thank you so much. It was really great to talk to you today. And well, I'm sure we'll have many more conversations about working parents in the future. But for now, have a very good snowy day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian. Take care. Bye-bye.
What a fantastic conversation. Ian's views on his version of the parent equation are so insightful and honest, and they make so much sense. So if you enjoyed this episode, then please follow and share from wherever you get your podcasts, and see you next time.